And welcome back to Coast AM. Linda Moulton Howe with a series of riveting stories just ahead for you on Coast to Coast AM. So sit back and relax. If you're driving, don't relax too much. And welcome back to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe joining us again. Linda, some of these months seem to go by so fast, don't they?
Yes, we really are going fast. And so is the discovery of various things about our planet.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Answering some of the questions. I remember when I was a kid, I asked my dad, where in the world did all the water and all the oceans come on this planet? And that has been a big, big mystery. It may still have some mystery to it, but we're getting closer, I think, to solving that long, long time question.
Well, you've uncovered some great stuff. And also, just a few weeks ago, scientists think that there's a very ancient Earth within the planet Earth that was still there during a collision. Just so many incredible things. But the story you've got tonight is one of the strangest, most baffling ones I've heard in a long time.
Well, it starts with the fact that 71% of Earth's surface area is water. Earth ocean depths can be as much as 5 to 6 miles, and even 6.8 miles deep in the Pacific's Mariana Trench. So how did all of this water end up on this planet that began when it was boiling hot and covered with lava? This question that has baffled scientists for a long time has produced theories like, well, comets crashed into the Earth and they left their ice behind to melt. But could comets provide all of the water that has filled Earth's oceans and seas? No one knows exactly when the first ocean filled, but estimates are as long ago as 3.8 billion years. Now, in the June 13th, 2014 issue of Science, geophysicists have reported the first hard evidence that 400 miles below the surface of the Earth's crust where we live, in the mantle transition zone, there are pressures and temperatures high enough to cause rocks to literally sweat water. Surprisingly, those deep mantle rocks might hold more water than all the oceans and seas combined on the Earth's surface, as incredible as that sounds.
Jeez, it is.
The research came from the Northwestern University's high-pressure studies of rocks down at that transition zone, such as ringwoodite and wadsleyite, and that was joined with seismic studies by the University of New Mexico from a dense array of 2,000 seismometers in the western half of the United States. The scientists hypothesize that these water-rich mantle rocks might finally be the answer to that ancient mystery, where did all of Earth's ocean waters come from? Here now from Evanston, Illinois, is professor and geophysicist Steve Jacobson.
It looks like from this study we're seeing, at least beneath the United States, an amount that would add up to about as much water as in the oceans. And if that is the case, spread out all over the globe at these depths, this could potentially reach up to 3 times as much water as found in the oceans. What we have found is that the water cycle extends much deeper into the planet than we thought before. Now, the water cycle that we experience every day involves rain and the formation of lakes and oceans, and water is evaporated back into the sky, and it's condensed in the form of clouds, and it rains again. That water can also go into rocks. So the ground is also part of the water cycle, and we can extend this water cycle deeper into the Earth if we think about volcanoes. Water is coming out of volcanoes in the form of steam. So where did that water come from? Well, it probably came from inside the Earth. How did it get there? It got there through a process called plate tectonics. We don't know the driving forces, but it has to do with heat inside the Earth. The Earth's interior is moving around in a process that we call convection. That's one way heat moves through the Earth. And sometimes these rocks on the surface are taken down into the Earth. And the study that we reported last week explored the idea that the Earth's water cycle extends much deeper into the planet. And this is important because it just makes the total amount of water on and in the Earth much larger than we thought before.
So we have in front of us on the surface oceans and seas and lakes. And what you're saying is that if we go down into the mantle, down to that transition layer that's about 400 miles below our feet, all of those rocks that contain water, the ringwoodite and the other,
the Wadsleyite,
it would be equivalent to twice the oceans and seas that we know about on the surface if it all came out of all of those rocks.
I'm saying that it could be. I'm not saying that it is. And that's because we were only able to image, using our seismic waves, one part of the mantle beneath the United States. We had seismometers spread out over the continental U.S., running from California up to about the Midwest. So we're sampling only a very small part of Earth's interior. We see evidence for more large-scale hydration. But we still don't know whether or not the hydration of the transition zone extends globally. So that will have to wait for future seismic studies of the transition zone in other parts of the world. So I can't tell you whether it's equal to the amount of water in the oceans or perhaps even double. But I can tell you that if the amount we observe is spread out over the entire Earth, there's the potential for there to be more water inside the Earth than in the oceans.
If that data comes in supporting what you just said, does that mean the mantle of our planet and its water cycle could explain all the surface oceans and seas?
It's possible, but we are not able to determine that for certain at this time. The research shows that it's certainly possible for the oceans to have derived from the interior. And certainly you could have a mixture. You could have some of Earth's water coming from comets and some of it coming from the inside.
And could your work then support the hypothesis that in the past, when the Earth was full of volcanism, mantle lava coming up in huge quantities could itself in the degassing process have produced lots of surface water?
Volcanism is the way in which planets degas. Whether or not that's how all of Earth's water degassed, I couldn't say. But the process of volcanism, I can tell you, is how planets degas. Yes.
We're on a planet that's about 4.5 billion years old. Do you reach a point going to the past that you need cometary ice hitting the surface of the Earth to get a water cycle going that would almost demand both comets as well as what is happening in the water cycle in the mantle to produce all this water?
Yeah, it's such a great question, Linda, and I really am not sure I know whether or not that's the case. There are two camps, and I suppose a hybrid one, who believe it could have been a little bit of both. One group believes that Earth's oceans were derived from the interior, that is, the hydrogen and the oxygen in the oceans are original to the Earth and came out of the mantle through melting processes. And this is a process that we call degassing, that once the Earth began to cool and the crust formed and plate tectonics started up, the mantle degassed our water. The other group would believe that water came much later in the Earth's history in the form of comets. And there are good arguments for both sides. Our study, which suggests that the Earth's interior might contain a reservoir even larger than the oceans, I think points to the idea that Earth's water came from inside and that it's original to the planet.
What about the rest of the solar system? The relationship between all of this water locked up in the rocks of the mantle versus the surface of the Earth, and all the question about Mars once upon a time perhaps having lots of water on its surface. What do you think, in the work that you've done, would explain what happened to the water on Mars and why you think that the water on the surface of the Earth may be related to the water cycle in the mantle as opposed to comets?
I guess I would maybe ask people to think about differences between Earth and Mars. Whereas we have plate tectonics on Earth, we don't see evidence for plate tectonics on Mars.
but it has the largest volcano in the entire solar system. Even if it is not blowing lava, it is still the largest volcano in the solar system.
That's right. So a volcano is absolutely evidence for some type of process that would be like plate tectonics. And certainly there could have been something like plate tectonics going on in the past, but today we don't see any evidence for active volcanism on Mars. So if Mars had plate tectonics, you're right, it could have. It apparently has shut down. So why has it shut down? Has it shut down because there was no water, no oceans to sort of lubricate these crustal movements like subduction? We think that the entire upper part of the Earth at one time was completely molten. We do have theories about there being a magma ocean within the first couple of 100 million years of the Earth. And so during magma ocean processes, we not only would have been probably delivering this hydrogen atoms to the surface, but it would have been very rapidly lost to space at that time because there was no atmosphere. So sometime in between magma ocean stage and the formation of the crust, we probably would have begun to retain water on the surface in the form of hydrous minerals and then eventually the building up of an atmosphere. But I think it's feasible for the oceans to have come almost entirely out of the inside through the process known as degassing.
And that would be volcanoes?
Essentially, yes. Yeah.
Well, your research does bring up all these questions because Mars has been so mysterious about having the surface channels suggesting that there was water there. And if water on our planet came from the mantle and a water cycle, you would think maybe the same thing was happening on Mars that has the largest volcano in the solar system. So what could have happened to Mars to shut down the volcanoes and all the water is gone?
There's a couple of reasons having to do with the fact that Mars doesn't have this layer in the mantle that we call the transition zone, because you have to go much deeper into Mars in order to stabilize the minerals that I'm studying called ringwoodite and wadsleyite. Those are the reservoirs of hydrogen in the mantle that we're studying in this work. Perhaps the other reason has to do with the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So in the very early formation of a planet, the mass of atoms in the atmosphere can determine the ability for things like hydrogen to escape into space. So once the Earth's atmosphere was oxygenated and became more massive, it became harder and harder for things like hydrogen to escape. And so once we had a dense atmosphere, we probably stopped losing much of our degassing water. Perhaps that's why maybe Mars lost more of its early water, because the atmosphere was different.
And how far back do we go in the history of our planet before we get to the first oceans?
That's a really good question. We have evidence for oceans as far back in time as maybe 3.5 billion years. There are quartz pebble conglomerate rocks in Australia that are of that age. They're Precambrian in age. And what that means is that there was flowing water, because you can't round a sediment and form a sedimentary rock like that without there being flowing water. So it looks like the Earth's oceans formed very early on in its history, and plate tectonics, therefore, also has probably been operating for at least 3 billion years on Earth, if not even longer.
So if you're right, what you have found in your research explains how we could have so much water on the surface if it comes from a very dynamic early planet in which there was a lot of outgassing.
This is one of the potential implications of the work. It could have doubled the size of our current understanding of the amount of water.
And George, he hopes next that what they'll do is be able to expand their seismometers to other parts of the planet and see if they get the same seismic feedback that they have gotten in the on the western half of the United States. And then the more data points, the more they will know. If all of this evidence does extend globally, then that statistic that there could be 2 to even 3 times the amount of H2O locked up in rocks than there is on the surface of the Earth may end up being really hard evidence.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's astounding. And sort of at the same time, it's odd that it was just in the fall of 2013 that the NASA Mars rover Curiosity found that there is surface soil on Mars that contains about 2% weight, which would be in water, which would be equal to 2 pints or a liter of water in every cubic foot there in the Martian soil. That was reported in the Science Journal in September, at the end of September. And Curiosity was doing this by heating up Martian dirt to a high temperature, and then they were identifying the gases that boiled off. And when they saw that they had significant amounts of carbon dioxide and oxygen and some sulfur compounds at equal to 2% water weight, that means that the Martian soil is sucking out of that thin atmosphere moisture just like it would if it were a sponge. And what the next step would be, if we get anybody to Mars, it is possible with that much happening on the surface that going down deeper, that may be where there still is some kind of a reservoir, whether it's in ice or whatever it is on Mars. And the next big issue on water on in this solar system is that NASA's Europa Jupiter mission, they hope to see if that big moon of Jupiter has the huge ocean they think it has. Now, it's so far out, and it isn't associated with a lot of tectonic plate activity like the Earth has been. So what happened there? How could Europa be completely covered with water and have an icy crust? Could that have happened just from comets? Or is there still a process related to water on certain planetary bodies or moons that we still don't understand? This is very fascinating because it affects everything that we're going to be doing as we move out into the solar system and we look at other nearby planets eventually to move to. The one thing that humans need will be water.
Do you remember the original Journey to the Center of the Earth with Pat Boone?
Oh, yes.
They had in the center of the planet a huge ocean. And this movie was done years ago, Linda. It's amazing how the producers, the writers would have that illustrated.
Well, it's almost like sometimes science fiction points in the right direction that science later follows up with something that in this case, that movie is like a metaphor for the science research that I've just reported. But it's not in sloshing around form. It's locked up in the mantle rocks that are 400 miles down. But nevertheless, that water is there. And exactly at this point where the pressure and heat is at the right intensity, those rocks are sweating water.
And Linda, up next, you've got a story of some strange sounds again, don't you?
I'm telling you what is happening with these sounds, and these are the metallic ones, and wait till you hear the reports from two eyewitnesses.
That's just ahead on Coast to Coast AM with Linda Moulton Howe, whose website is earthfiles.com. We shall be right back. Don't touch your dial. And welcome back. Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, strange, loud, screeching metallic sounds. What are they?
You know that I have been reporting about this since 2011, when it seemed to be a phenomena that started and has come from around the world, literally. And I think that the oddest part to it is the metallic scraping and the trumpet sounds.
Yeah.
And recently, on June 18th, she's an administrative assistant in the University of Michigan Health System in Ann Arbor, and she arrived home from work on June 18th, and it was the early afternoon before a thunderstorm, and she's asked me to give her a little anonymity and just call her Patty. Upstairs, her partner was working, and across the street, a neighbor was home. all three heard a loud metallic scraping sound that seemed to come from the sky, and it lasted for several seconds. Patty compared the mysterious sound to, quote, a snowplow going down a dry street, almost like a squealing as it's scraping, close quote. And remember last year and the year before, how many others have had that same comparison to something like a snowplow or a blade going along dry asphalt or even metal on metal? Here now from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Patty.
I was home from work. I got home about 1 o'clock, and I was watching the World Cup in the afternoon, and we got a weather warning on the television that there would be strong thunderstorms and hail moving through the Ann Arbor area at about 4:15. I had about 20 minutes before that time, so I went out on the patio, put away the lawn chairs, picked up things on the porch, just looked for loose things, and put one of the cars in the garage, just in case there was damaging hail. It was about 4:20. I'm really a storm watcher. I love to watch a storm roll in. I've done that since I was a kid. So I was standing on the side porch, which is, it's just a covered porch. It has one of those corrugated plastic roofs on it, and it faces south. The storm was coming in. It was all rain, no thunder, no lightning, and it started coming down really, really hard. I called inside to my partner, Jean, and told her to close the upstairs windows on the west side of the house because it was really raining quite hard. And I'm standing on the porch, and all of a sudden there was this really loud, like an oppressive sound. I literally cringed. It was almost on the threshold of pain to your ears, and it sounded like metal, just sounded like scraping. And it lasted probably about 10 seconds. And I thought, what is my neighbor doing? And I stepped off the porch and looked, and he's not home. It was such an eerie noise. It kind of shook me up. So I came in the house. I yelled to Jean. She was upstairs. Did you hear that? She's like, what the heck was that? Came downstairs, went back out on the porch. Maybe it had been a couple minutes. And the sound came again. And this time, because I often count between the lightning and the thunder, I counted, and it was 15 seconds that this sound, I swear it was coming from the sky, and it was so loud that even the sound of the rain on the roof, it like blocked it out, and kind of gave me chills, because it was just such an odd sound. I thought, I've got to grab a recorder or something, so I ran in the house, I got my iPad, and went back out on the porch and turned on the GarageBand app just to see if I could catch something. Stayed out there another 20 minutes, and by this point, the thunder and lightning were really moving through, and I didn't hear it again. It was the oddest thing. It really was inexplicable.
Why do you feel something ominous?
Well, I think the logical mind is always trying to figure out what's happening. I know the sounds of my neighborhood, and I know the sounds of a thunderstorm, and this fit in no category of things that I have heard. And the fact that it really felt like it was above me in the sky, it made no sense. Couldn't have been a plane, couldn't have been some kind of industry. We don't have that right in the area. So it was just one of those things that felt like it didn't fit.
And as you describe this to me right now, only a day after you heard this, what comes into your mind when you think of this disturbing you?
I don't know. It's just I find myself kind of looping it over in my mind of hearing it again and just not being able to put my finger on anything logical.
Could you go back over in detail? Did it sound like a chord?
Well, I guess the description that I was sharing with someone earlier today, if you had a snowplow going down a dry street, and you had this sound of scraping metal against concrete. It's kind of rumbling, but at the same time, it's almost like a squealing as it's scraping. But the difference is you'd have to be on the truck or alongside the truck because it was a prolonged sound at the same volume, and it started and ended at the same volume for that extended period of time.
And was loud enough to drown out the sound of the rain on your roof?
Yes.
Did your partner upstairs fill in what she heard herself?
She said the same thing. It was so loud that it kind of scared her because she thought maybe something had happened downstairs. But she said it sounded like metal.
What have you found out about anybody else hearing this?
Well, I did email one of my neighbors who I know was home at the time, and she lives across the street and two houses down. So it's kind of catty-corner. I can see her house from mine. And I just said, you know, did you hear anything during the storm around 4:15? And she wrote back and said, I did hear something during the storm and looked out the front to see what it was, but I didn't see anything, and then it was gone. And then she asked me any ideas of what it could have been. We haven't talked since then, but it was helpful to know that, well, first of all, Jean heard it upstairs, so I wasn't crazy, and then somebody else in the neighborhood heard it. So it was something real. I think there are times when you question yourself later if what you heard actually happened.
Right, and three witnesses at the same time of this metallic sound is important because in so many of these instances, it has been so peculiar that the sound, whether it's come from above in the air or people have felt something from the ground below, and it has been a metallic quality, often it has seemed to be focused on only a house. Often people feel that it is coming from above, but you didn't see anything, right?
No, in fact, I was watching for lightning. So I was eyes toward the sky to actually look for lightning so I could count for the thunder coming in, and I didn't see anything in the sky. I think the other thing I'd just like to say is when it happened, I felt like, my gosh, I should tell someone, I need to report this. And of course, then I was like, well, who do you tell? You don't call the police. And I just started looking up like weird sounds in the sky on the internet. And that's actually how I ended up on your website, because I had gone through a couple of different websites where people were either talking about strange sounds or trumpets or something of that nature, and yours was the first I got to where I could actually contact someone, and I just felt like I have an obligation to report something strange.
Another person who recently shared his highly strange encounter with both the loud, screeching metallic sound and another almost electronic synthesizer knocking sound is Gordon from the remote Western Alaska Prince of Wales Island. Gordon, now 54 years old, was born and raised in Seattle, Washington. But in 1982, he moved with his wife further northwest to the island. He has spent his life working as a carpenter and hunter and knows all the construction and wilderness sounds of Alaska's Prince of Wales Island. This is the fourth largest U.S. island where only 6,000 people live. 3 years ago, in mid-November 2011, the same year that the mysterious phenomenon of strange sounds began making news around the world, Gordon and his hunting dog had their own encounter with baffling, even scary, sounds on a mountain.
All of a sudden I heard an extremely loud screeching noise. It sounded like a 10,000-gallon steel drum being dragged over a bed of rocks. And it was coming from the valley below me, and I was about 1,500-foot level. And then I heard this strange noise associated with it. It was like a real fast popping noise, staccato, a striking, almost electronic.
Okay, electronic. And that means what? That it had a hollow quality?
It sounded like it had a hollow quality, yes.
Now, can you give the rhythm of it?
Yeah, it went bang, 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 that fast. And I've never heard anything like this before in my life.
Is this rapid knocking sound going on simultaneously with the huge metallic scraping sound?
It didn't go on simultaneously. There was a loud scraping noise, metallic sound. Then that died away. Then the sharp striking noises or clicking noises started, and then it went quiet. And my dog was looking down over the hill, and her hackles were up, and she doesn't do that unless there's a bear around.
So there was something about the sound that put your dog on guard in a threatened way.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Okay, so now you've heard how many seconds of the strong metallic grating sound and how many seconds of the rapid knocking sound?
I'd say at least 10 seconds of each, probably longer with the metal sound.
And now it's gone completely silent. What do you and your dog do?
It actually baffled me because I knew I was down in that valley early in the morning and I knew there was nothing down there that could have made that noise. It was just really strange. I didn't know what it was. I wanted to get off the mountain. So we headed straight down the mountain. Right before we got to the cliffs, the noise happened again. And this time it was right above us on top of the mountain. And that's when I knew this was really weird. And the dog was really acting panicky at that time. It was the hitting sounds that was upsetting her, more so than the metallic sounds. Almost electronic, like choo, choo, like a synthesizer would kind of make. That probably went on for 5 or 10 seconds. And believe me, Linda, I thought there was going to be a Bigfoot jumping out behind a tree. I really did. I did not know what I was hearing at all. It was extremely foreign to me. I've been in the woods all my life and never, ever heard anything like this. It's a very remote area. There's no logging activity going on there at all anymore. It's 60 miles to the nearest grocery store.
And what did your dog do?
She turned looking uphill with her hackles raised and then came back right behind me and heeled up. She didn't fear very much.
But she was afraid of this.
Yes, and she'd even go after a bear. She's chased bear out of our yard before, so I know whatever it was freaked her out pretty hard.
And I ask Gordon if he would listen to YouTube and see if there were any other strange sounds that might be similar to what he heard with his dog on top of that mountain in the remote Prince of Wales Island. And this is what he sent me.
Strange stuff, Linda.
Now, if you heard that on top of a mountain by yourself,
it sounds like either construction or some craft of something. Jeez.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear us? Linda?
Hello.
I can hear you very well, Linda.
Hello.
Well, Linda, you obviously punched a button.
No, I didn't. I didn't do anything.
Well, you can hear me. Are you there?
Yeah, I can barely hear you. I have no idea.
Well, we can hear you well.
I just did a play on there. I can hardly hear you.
Linda, you're on the air, and we can hear you well.
Yeah, I'm okay now. It's punching back in. I don't know what was wrong, but anyway, I wanted to give you this feeling of that sudden, very strange, weird, metallic sound, and that's the one that he picked out, and that was in Manitoba in Canada in 2012, so that was only a couple of years ago. And this gives you a sense that June 18th, a woman is hearing something like this in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and 3 years ago on a mountain in the Prince of Wales Island on the west coast of Alaska, and that recording is in Manitoba on the far east near Hudson Bay. And just recently, I heard from a man in the UK. He said that on June 22nd, and we're talking now in the early morning of June 27th, that at 5:15 a.m. in the UK on a Sunday morning, mm-hmm. he said it woke him up. It was a sound that lasted for what he estimated was 3 minutes. He got out of bed, opened the window to see if he could locate the source, but there was nothing to be seen. And he said, I wondered if it was a train, but the railway tracks are in a different direction. But this was an eerie sound that was a combination of like elephants trumpeting, but a metallic scraping as if a very large piece of machinery was dragging along a road. So that was June 22nd, same kind of description. That's in England. On May 19th, this came from Ogden, Utah. I live about 7 miles west of Ogden, Utah, and on May 19th, at exactly 2 p.m., I was in my front yard when I heard a loud explosion. It was so loud and startling that I fully expected to see smoke and fire. I looked outside. I could see nothing. I looked in all directions. I went inside. I knew that it was not a sonic boom. That was an explosion. I called the fire station, which is only about a mile and a half from my home. But they said that they didn't have reports at that moment. Then the dispatcher called back a short time later and told me that other dispatchers had received other reports just within a few miles to the north of my location, but they had no explanation for this loud, huge explosion. Then there was nothing on the news that night and nothing on the local internet news about explosions in the area. This was incredible to me, considering how security is concerned in the government these days. You would think that local law enforcement would investigate this further, but I heard nothing more about it, and I wondered if you have had reports at Earth Files from this Ogden area. I certainly have in the past, not specifically May, but I know so many people are reluctant to talk about hearing strange sounds. So that's why I keep gathering these cycles of reports that are coming to me constantly and report at Earth Files and Coast in hopes that there might be viewers, for example, tonight, both of Earth Files and listening to Coast, who maybe you have heard some strange, loud, overwhelming metallic sound or any other kind of boom sound in just this year that you haven't talked about. And if you would get in touch with me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com, George, I think this is a very, very important phenomena to keep following and reporting because something is out there, whether it is infrasound from the core of the earth going up and hitting up in the upper atmosphere, or if there is something else at foot.
Yeah,
I need whistleblowers if there's somebody in the government who has knowledge about what is behind this, because it is not stopping.
It sounds like somebody's building something underground. We'll talk a little bit more about that, Linda, when we take phone calls in your last hour of conversations with Linda. But up next, a dragonfly drone outside of a bedroom window? That's next.